Welcome to Shiur Ksav HaKabbalah, Parshas Vayetze. Wanted to start this evening with a comment from Ksav HaKabbalah, Perek Chav Ches, Posuk Tezayin. Yaakov Avinu has just had the dream with the ladder, and he wakes up, and after waking up, he says, Vayomer Achein Yesh Hashem B'Mokom Hazeh. Indeed, Hashem is present in this place. V'Anochi Lo Yodati, and I was unaware of it. What does that mean? So, Ksav HaKabbalah, Kabbalah, on the simple level, Kvod Shchinaso Nir B'Mokom Hazeh El Aruyim Eilav. This is a holy place. Clearly, this is the place where God's glory is manifest to those people who deserve it. Ki makom nivchar yesh legilui shechina, because there's certain places that are more open or apt to be able to bring down the shechina. Kmo shekasu v'yal makom asher yivchar Hashem bo l'shakin shmo sham. Right, when the Torah speaks about the place that's going to be the Beis Hamikdash, it's the place that God chooses to allow His Shechina to come down over there. So, you know, there's certain places that I guess have a greater receptivity to the notion of the Shechina. And comments, the Ksav HaKabbalah, again, fleshing out the simple pshat in the posuk, Vim ho'yisi yodeshu, makom kodesh kazeh, lo yoshanti. And what Yaakov Avinu was saying is, had I known that this was one of these special places, that this was a place that's a receptacle for being able to bring down the Shechina, I wouldn't have slept in such a holy place. That's indeed, the Ksav HaKabbalah doesn't quote Rashi, but that's Rashi's interpretation of the pasuk. Again, quoting from the Midrashim, Rashi just writes, Shim Yodati. What does it mean, Vanochi lo Yodati? I didn't know how holy this place was. Shim Yodati lo Yoshanti b'makom kodesh kazeh. Right? That's Rashi. If had I known, I wouldn't have slept in such a place. You know, you don't go and sleep right in front of the Arab. You don't go and sleep right in front of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, had I known that this was a mini holy place over here, I wouldn't have degraded it by sleeping there. Ken katu ha-mefarshim. Says Ksav HaKabbalah, that's what the earlier mefarshim say. U'kvar to'an harosh al zeh, ki'ech yischaret al ha-shchiva. However, the Rosh, again, Rabbeinu Asher, one of the Rishonim, already asked the Kasha, says Ksav HaKabbalah, that the statement of Yaakov Avinu is a very strange one on a certain level. So Yaakov Avinu says, had I known, I wouldn't have slept here. In other words, I regret having slept here. How could it be that he regrets having slept here? Harei akosuv meyid should nimshecha lo brocha mishach bo sham. What happens when he goes to sleep? HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him, and Hashem says, Ha'aretz asher atah shochev aleha l'chayet neno l'zarecha. This land which you're sleeping upon, I will give to you and to your children. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't criticize him for sleeping in this area. If anything, the bracha implies the opposite. You're sleeping here, and this land that you're sleeping upon is going to be given to you and to your children. Chazal say, again, literally, metaphorically, whatever exactly, but Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all of Eretz Yisrael, crumpled it up, and stuck it under Yaakov Avinu as he slept. So, again, whatever that means exactly, it's certainly not a criticism of Yaakov Avinu sleeping in that place. If anything, it seems that his choosing to sleep in such a holy place enabled the bracha to come about. So what does he regret? You know, why does he regret having slept in a place that enabled the bracha to come about? U'milvad ve'muchach misidur milos ha'maymer she'eno medaber ikdushas ha'makom. Besides that, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, although Rashi and the other Mefarshim interpret the statement of Yaakov Avinu as somehow focusing on the holiness of this place. In other words, had I known how holy this place was, Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, had I known how holy the place was, Anochi lo yodati, I just didn't know about it. But the pasuk doesn't really seem to be speaking about how holy the place is. Dimkein hoyo lo lahaktim ha-makom la-shem, v'lomar b'makom hazeh Yesh Hashem, v'oz ha-yomore al-makom zulas makom. Right? So says the Ksav HaKabbalah, again, if you pay careful attention to the way the Pasuk expresses itself, the Pasuk says, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. There is Hashem in this place. Says Aksav HaKabbalah, if the emphasis was on the holiness of the place, this place is special, then the place should have been earlier in the pasuk. B'makom hazeh yesh Hashem. In this place, there is Hashem. In other words, the emphasis in the pasuk, the way the pasuk is constructed, should have been a little bit different if the emphasis was on the holiness of the place. So lochei nira li. So says Aksav HaKabbalah, based on these questions: A, why does Yaakov Avinu feel bad that he was sleeping in this place? I mean, the fact that it's holy doesn't seem to be a reason for him not to sleep there. After all, he got the bracha there. Number two, the way the pasuk is constructed, Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, doesn't really seem to focus on the idea that this is a holy place, but rather Yesh Hashem, there is Hashem, seems to be the focus. So Lachein Yirali would seem to me, therefore, says Aksav HaKabbalah, that you could interpret the words of Yaakov Avinu in an entirely different fashion. And goes on, as we're going to see in just a moment, to give a very, very different interpretation of this pasuk. It says as follows: Afsha Haisa Mitzias Hashem Noda Ilah B'Kabbalah Me'Avosav. Yaakov Avinu certainly believed in Hashem, right? He certainly had a tradition from Yitzchak, from Avram, that there is one God in the world. He certainly believed everything that they had told him about their experiences with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course it stands to reason without a doubt that Yaakov Avinu not only had, you know, a simple emunah, but had a very sophisticated understanding of great and lofty spiritual things. I mean, again, you know, we don't know this directly from the Psukim, but, you know, what did Yaakov Avinu do? He was Yosheva Holim. He sat around, he learned, he went to Sheva Eva for 14 years. You know, it certainly stands to reason that he had a very deep and sophisticated understanding of things that are godly. B'chol zos, kishezacha pam rishona l'mar nevuah zo, shenizgalso hashchino v'lomar elov, ani Hashem. Shinis Amsalom Mitzias Hamiti Bemare, Shehibli Sofik Mailo Yisera Livli Tachlis, Al Kabbalosov Yidioso Hakodemus Lo Bozeh. Think about it, however, says Aksav HaKabbalah. This, in the beginning of Parshas Vayetzeh, is the first time that Yaakov Avinu encounters God directly. Vinei Hashem Nitzav Alav Ayomar, Ani Hashem. Hashem is standing upon him and says to him, I am Hashem. After decades of believing in Hashem, learning about Hashem, developing a sophisticated understanding of Hashem, finally, in this Mara, in this vision, for the very first time, Hashem appears to him. And says Aksav HaKabbalah, whatever intellectual understanding Yaakov had up until this point, it all pales in comparison to the actual experience. You know, it's one thing to say, I believe in Hashem, I have certain insights into Hashem. It's another thing for Hashem to appear to you in a dream and actually make his presence known. He named Mirov Chiba Hayesterosh and Odaslo in your Nichvadzeh. He siach daito mikol avtochos hagedola shehuftach aleihem ba. Uv simcha gedola his tale lomar achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. So because of this incredible new experience that for the first time Yaakov Avinu is not only learning about Hashem, but is actually experiencing Hashem, Yaakov Avinu's first reaction to everything that he's experienced during the dream is not even to focus on the brachos. I mean, if you think about it, Hashem told him incredible things. I'm going to give you Eretz Yisrael. Your children are going to be numerous, right? Many, many brachos Hashem gives to Yaakov. Yaakov doesn't even pay attention to those things initially. His initial reaction is, wow, I encountered Hashem directly. And that's what he says, Ubisimcha Gedola, his Palei Lemar, Achein Yesh Hashem Bamokom Azeh, Yirtse Lomar, Nisames Etzli, Behasogon Ifla, Mitzvias Hashem Bamokom Azeh. When he says Yesh Hashem Bamokom Azeh, it doesn't mean that this is a place which is habitually holy, or that this is the place where Hashem regularly comes to. Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh means I experienced Hashem for the first time in this place. According to that, Aksav HaKabbalah goes back to one of the points he raised earlier, and you know, we can understand the subtlety in terms of how the pasuk expresses itself a little bit better. The Ksav HaKabbalah said, had the emphasis been on the sacred nature of the place, the holiness of the place, so then the pasuk should have said, "Bamakom hazeh yesh Hashem." In this place, there is Hashem. But the focus, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, is not that this place is special; it's that my experience was special in this place. Yesh Hashem, I experienced Hashem b'makom hazeh, in this place. Wow, you know that, and you know, okay, we'll get to in a minute. Says Yaakov Avinu, we'll get to all the brachos that Hashem promised me. But the first incredible thing that I just have to say is, wow, after a lifetime of learning about Hashem, I finally actually experienced Hashem. Okay, so we'll get to that in a second. So it continues that Ksav HaKabbalah. V'achar shemitznoi had nevuah she'eino chala rak al chacham gadol b'chachma k'shenichnas l'pardes v'nimshach ba'osan ha'inyonim ha'gadolim ha'rechokim v'tiel ol de'al nechona l'hovin u'lahasig. As we know, for a person to be able to achieve nevuah, to be able to achieve prophecy, most of the time, the person has to be already a great chacham, a very wise and sophisticated person in terms of his understanding. He has to already have deepened his knowledge in those mystical aspects of Judaism. Again, the way the Ksav HaKabbalah puts it is nichnas lepardes, he goes into the orchard, which is a phrase referring to connecting to the mystical side of Judaism. You know, not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just drop nevuah on the average guy. You know, the person has to prepare himself to be able to be a klikibul, to be able to be a receptacle, to receive nevuah. Vein safek shenitzal Yaakov Avinu al hasagos hanichbados ha'ela beveis aviv uvemeis midrashos shoshem ve'ever. It goes without saying that Yaakov Avinu was certainly prepared to be able to receive nevuah. You know, this first nevuah that he's having didn't just come out of the blue. You know, he had prepared himself by learning in his father's house in the Beis Medrash shoshem ve'ever. Ad shemitzidam lo haisalo mechitza hamavdeles oso min hanavuah. And the truth is, Yaakov Avinu, if there was anyone who was fit for receiving nevuah, it was Yaakov Avinu. There was, you know, certainly he had prepared himself. It's not shocking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him. B'chol zos miderek holchei tamim lahakdin ma'alosam. Nonetheless, despite all of this, good people, honest people, people of integrity, always downplay their accomplishments and they downplay their greatness. We mentioned when we started the Shiur Ksav HaKabbalah that the Ksav HaKabbalah himself, whose name was Yaakov, right, was an incredibly humble person. We mentioned, as Rabbi Tsuriel mentions in his Akdamah's introduction, that when Rav Eliyahu Gutmacher, one of the great Gedolim of the time, wrote to the Balak Ksav HaKabbalah asking him for a copy of the Sefer, the Balak Ksav HaKabbalah wrote back, "Look, I'll send you a copy of the Sefer, but I don't know why a Gadol B'Yisrael like you would be interested in my Sefer. I wrote it for the pop, you know, for the masses. I didn't write it for big Talmidei Chacham, and there's nothing really all that exciting in the Sefer. If you want, I'll send it to you, but you know, can't imagine why you'd be so interested in it." And he meant it, you know, and that was the character trait of the Ksav HaKabbalah himself, this incredible modesty. So, again, when you have a certain character trait, you tend to see that character trait in other people. So the Ksav HaKabbalah says, it goes without saying that, you know, when people are real, proper, appropriate people, they downplay their own accomplishments and their own, you know, their own greatness. So certainly Yaakov Avinu, we're not surprised that Yaakov Avinu received nevuah from Hashem, but Yaakov Avinu, in his humility, was surprised that he received nevuah from Hashem. Lochein nidma be'enov shechaserim lo od mada'o sichlios. So therefore, if you would have asked Yaakov Avinu, you know, is it surprising that you encountered HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Yaakov Avinu would have said, yeah, I'm so blown away by the fact that Hashem appeared to me. I didn't feel ready for this. I didn't feel like I achieved the level of knowledge and understanding that would enable HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appear to me. If you would have asked Yaakov Avinu, are you fit to be a Navi? He said, not me, fit to be a Navi? Nah, what are you talking about? Lachain Omar v'anochi lo yodati. So that's the end of the pasuk. Says Daksava Kabbalah v'anochi lo yodati. I didn't know. I didn't know what. So again, we quoted Rashi before. Rashi says v'anochi lo yodati. I didn't know how special this place was. If I would have known, I wouldn't have slept there. But Aksava Kabbalah doesn't like that pshat. He says, again, you know, it's not a function of the place. It's the experience that was unique that Yaakov Avinu had there. So what's Vanochi lo yodati? Yirta lomar, adayin lo higati el hayidios hoiru'uyos lemailozo. Says Yaakov Avinu, I'm not a yodeya. I'm not a person who really understands enough about Hashem that I should be worthy of Hashem appearing to me. Right? Again, we use that phrase even today. I'm not a Yodei, I'm not a person who understands, I'm not such a deep, sophisticated person, I'm not a big intellectual, I'm not so spiritual, you know, I'm a Pashto the Yid, says Yaakov Avinu. I'm a simple guy, you know, I sat in the back of the Beis Medrash by Shem Ve'eva, you know, I wasn't sitting in the front, I don't know how many people sat in the front by Yeshiva Shem Ve'eva. How big was the Yeshiva? Which year was he in? First year, second year, I don't know, you know, but Yaakov Avinu says, yeah, I'm a simple guy, Anochi lo yodati, I don't have the yedios, I don't have the knowledge to really make me worthy of Hashem appearing to me. So I'm blown away by the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would appear to me, that Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, that Hashem would appear to me under these circumstances. Who am I? V'yesh v'loshon yodah inyin hakara v'hasaga. You should know in general, says the Aksava Kabbalah, the loshon of yodeyat, of knowing something, is not just being aware of a fact, but really understanding something on a deep level. You can know something, you can understand something. Right? I know that when I turn the light switch on, the light goes on. Do I understand why that works? As far as I know, it has something to do with mice running around, you know, inside on a treadmill, and they put the electricity on. That's what I know, you know. It could be that is how it works. I don't know, but probably not, you know. But so I have the idea. I know that the light goes on when I flick the switch. Do I understand why the light goes on when I flick the switch? So Ksavah Kabbalah says, the word yediyah means not only to know, it means to understand. You know, if I have a deep understanding of why something is true. Ki hamastik dover yeda also. If I really get something, that's called yediyah. Kemosha kosov, v'shmuel terem yada has Hashem. It says at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, that when Shmuel Anavi was a young child, being reared by Eli HaKohen in the vicinity of the Mishkan, Shmuel terem yada has Hashem. Shmuel did not yet know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does know mean over there? Targumo lo alaf lemeida ulfon min kodam Hashem. He had not yet learned to be able to understand Hashem. So that's what Yaakov Avinu was saying. I don't feel that I have the depth of understanding that should have made me roy, that should have made me fit to be able to receive a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He then quotes, "Uvmechutar de Rashbi kan." In the Zohar, we find the following expression, right? Taksava Kabbalah. We pointed out Taksava Kabbalah was a tremendous baki in many things. He knew many, many things. One of the things he knew was Zohar. Vanochi lo yodati omer v'chi kol hai iskeli li v'lo istaklus leminda anochi ulemeyal techos gadfi d'shchin lemehevi shlim. Yaakov Avinu says, according to the Zohar, on that pasuk, "Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yodati." Hakadosh Baruch Hu, look, Hakadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me, and Hakadosh Baruch Hu has made it his business to know me, but I'm not worthy of being underneath Hashem's wings and being shalom, being complete of the level where I'm able to receive the Shechina from Hashem. So says the Zohar, and writes Aksava Kabbalah Advar Krov Lamashe Kosavti. It's very similar to the way we're interpreting the statement of Yaakov Avinu as well. How could it be? Wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me despite my unworthiness. Vanochi lo yodati. One last point. The Tevas Yesh Iker Hanochoso Lekiyah Mitzias Inyan Ma Hefech Mimilas Ein. Shahara Oslo Shlilo Muchletes. Yesh implies that a certain thing exists. Ein implies, of course, that there is utter absence of that thing. V'ikr milas yesh hi l'shem davar. V'af al pi shehu shem, pa'amim peirusho b'inyan hein. V'lef'amim yosifu aleph b'rosho v'yomru ayesh, ish. V'hu shem davar nofel kol atzmi nimsa. Kimo v'yitein ish bistro. V'ikr yisodo yesh. Yesh means something, a thing. And because yesh means something, a thing, it's actually related, says Akstava Kabbalah, to the word ish. Now ish, we say, means a man, right? You know, so what's the connection between ish and yesh? We sometimes, however, find, says Akstava Kabbalah, that ish is used not in reference to a human being, but it's used in reference to an item. So, for instance, by the Bris Ben Absarim, back in Parshas Lech Lecha, so Avraham Avinu divides the animals into two pieces, and it says, "Vayitein ish bisro likras riyehu." He took each man, he put one part opposite the other one. Now, men were not split into two pieces. Animals were split into two pieces. What's ish bistro likras v'yeyu? So says Aksava Kabbalah, once you realize that ish is related to the word yesh, yesh just means something which exists, an item. So ish bistro means each item, each animal which was split into two, he took one side of it, one unit, and he placed it opposite Reyehu, the other unit. The word ish can be used not in the sense of a human being or a man, it can be used just in the sense of a unit, something that exists. That's what he's saying. So that's he says as well, again just as an aside, the Aramaic word which means yesh is is, aleph yud saf. So what's the etymology of is? So he writes interestingly as follows. We know that the tof in Aramaic very often stands in for the shin in Hebrew, right? Torah, right, is a Torah with an aleph at the end, is an ox, right? So in other words, instead of a shor, it's a tor, right? The Torah. So the saf at the end of is really a shin. So if you take the word is and you just substitute a shin for the tof that's at the end, so you really have the word ish. So we're back to a word which is essentially just a cognate word to yesh, again proving the point of Aksava Kabbalah that the words yesh and the word ish ultimately are related to one another. Right, that you know, ish doesn't necessarily mean a man; it could just mean a unit of existence. It is interesting. Let's just build on this idea of Aksava Kabbalah for a moment. It is interesting that if the word ish simply means something that exists, right, which is the way the Aksava Kabbalah is basically explaining it. So we do take the word ish. The Hebrew language does take the word and applies it to a human being, which is striking. In other words, the word ish, instead of really meaning man, just means something that exists, a thing, you know, a unit. It seems odd that that term would be applied to a human being. You would think there'd be some special term for a human being. Perhaps, again, this is me, not Aksava Kabbalah, so again, if you don't like it, you know, money back at the end of this year. But perhaps one can suggest that what the Hebrew language is trying to convey is that the ultimate unit of existence is the human being. Right? There are many things out there in the world that are units that exist, but the ultimate, the building block of what existence is about, the pinnacle, the point, the purpose of existence, is ish. So in other words, rather than the word ish denigrating man and saying, ah, you're just a unit of creation, you are the tachlis of creation. You are the ultimate reason that there's yesh, that there's something in the world, and that's why the words yesh and ish are ultimately cognates with one another. We'll daven Ma'ariv Bez Hashem, and then after Ma'ariv of the second part of the Shir of Aksava Kabbalah to the Chanan ben Akasha Omer. Okay. Welcome to the second part of the Shir Aksava Kabbalah, Parshas Vayetze. Wanted to do for this second part of the Shir a piece from Perek Lamed, Pasuk Lamed Zayin in Aksava Kabbalah, that part of the Parsha that, I don't know about you, I never really understood. Yaakov Avinu makes a deal with Lavan. You're going to get these sheep, not these sheep. Yaakov Avinu goes, he takes rods, he puts them in the trough where the sheep are going to drink. And somehow that has an impact on the colors of the sheep. They become speckled and spotted and spotted and all different kinds of things. I remember years ago, went to an educational center in Bnei Brak, actually, where they had a whole diagram set up, you know, trying to demonstrate how this worked exactly. I saw the diagram. I'm not sure I still understand how all of this worked. But nonetheless, the Haksava Kabbalah is a very, very unique and original take on how to understand this whole parsha. So let's see what he has to say. So in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Haksava Kabbalah writes, Da shkimash lokach Yaakov makal livne lo osto midas atzmo rakal pimaloch. When Yaakov Avinu came up with this idea of taking the rods and putting them in the troughs where the sheep would drink, it wasn't his own idea. It was the Malach, the angel, that revealed to him to do this. Ki chein omar Yaakov l'rochel ululeo sheomar lo ha-malach, soi necho re'ei kol ho'atudim v'gomer. In the next parak, parak Lamed Aleph, after Yaakov begins to get the vibes from Lavan that he's not so welcome anymore, so he calls Rachel and Leah out into the field and he says, you know, I had a dream. Different speech, I had a dream. I had a dream, and in the dream I saw these sheep, you know, and the Malach came to me, right? We'll read it inside. Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Eli, Malach Elokim Bachalom, Yaakov, Vomar Hineni, Vayomer, Sano Inecho Re'ei Kolo Atudim, Ha'olim Alatson, Akudim, Nekudim, Uvrudim, Kiro Isti, Esa Shekola Sherlovan Osaloch. Look in the dream, and you'll see all the different types of sheep. You know, I've seen, says Hashem, I have seen all of the things that Hakadosh Baruch, that Lavan rather is doing to you. So the way the Ksava Kabbalah understands the dream is that the Malach didn't just show him sheep. The Malach told Yaakov what to do in order to make sure that Lavan would be that Yaakov's interests rather would be protected against what Yaakov was trying to do to him. Now, of course, you'll ask the obvious question. Wait a minute, but Yaakov does whatever he does back in Perek Lamed, and the dream with the Malach is only related in Perek Lamed Aleph. It sounds like the dream with the Malach was after Yaakov Avinu did whatever he did. So that's the Aksava Kabbalah, no problem. V'ein muktam uma'uchar ba'Torah. You know, we have a general principle that Torah isn't always in chronological order, and you know, this is no exception as well. The dream actually preceded whatever it is that Yaakov Avinu did with the sheep exactly. Now, the truth is, again, you know, it's, we know Mepharshim have different perspectives about how liberally one can use the idea Ein Muktam U'Mukhar Batara. Some of the Mepharshim are very, very quick to say Ein Muktam U'Mukhar Batara. The Ramban, in contrast, says we only can really say it, you know, when Chazal tell us that we have the right to say it, as a matter of course, we have to assume that the Torah is in chronological order. But even if one wants to take a more narrow definition of when we say Ein Muktam U'Mukhar Batara, it's quite possible to apply it over here. When Yaakov conveys the contents of the dream, it's not 100% clear from the psukim that this is a dream that he just had the night before. Right? In other words, Yaakov Avinu, the simple pshat seems to be, yes, you know, Yaakov Avinu calls Rachel and Leah out to the field, and he says, you know, I had a dream, sounds like I had a dream last night. But it's not abundantly clear, it's not 100% clear in the psukim that that's the case. It is possible to interpret the dream as something that he had previously, and only at this point is revealing to Rachel and Leah. And you can read it that way without really having to force too much into the psukim. So Aksava Kabbalah understands that this whole dream that Yaakov Avinu had was a prior revelation, where the Malach came to Yaakov and said, you wanna outsmart Lavan, this is what you're going to do, you know, and he explains to him, probably even better than that educational thing that I still explained it, right? So Yaakov Avinu Taka got it, he understood what he was supposed to do. V'hinei Yaakov kishiro hamara hazeh b'chalom,
Yadash HaKadosh Baruch Hu Osa Lo Neis Kadesh Shelo Yirama Osa Lovam. Yaakov Avinu saw, once he had this dream, so he realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to be on his side and was going to miraculously intercede on behalf of Yaakov. Kemosh Kostu Ve'elokei Avi Hayo Imadi, as Yaakov Avinu himself says, my God, the God of my father, was with me, and he made sure that I wasn't going to be bamboozled by Lavan. So once Yaakov saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to help him out in terms of his ongoing interaction with Lavan, Hitzig Hamaklos Tahem Kadesh Yiskayim Hanes Ayidei Maisativi. So what was the function of the rods in the water? So says Aksava Kabbal, an idea that we see in other contexts. Even once a person is shown a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's some positive element to do something physical in this world so that the nevuah will come to fruition in a stronger way. Right? Even if you have a nevuah, the nevuah is more likely to come true if the recipient of the nevuah does something physical to kind of ground the nevuah here in this world. So for instance, right, Kamosha Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Yashuv Mochemes Ay Simcha Orev La'ir Me'acharov V'kevon Shekol Milchamosem Shal Yisrael Hoya Yidei Neis Malahem La'orev Aval Tzivohu Shiyasta Dover Liyosibo La'neis. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yoshua to attack the city of Ai, he gives Yoshua a whole battle plan. How he's going to have a group of people, Jewish soldiers, they're going to be in ambush, and they're going to draw the people out of the city, they're going to ambush them. I don't understand. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making a nisim, if he's making miracles, why do we need a whole battle plan? The battle plan is, you go, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to wipe out the enemy. The answer is, even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to be with you, there needs to be some kind of physical action in this world in order to draw down the nes, to make sure that the nes, that the miracle, is going to happen. So too over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov Avinu, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to make this whole sheep episode come out in your favor. Okay, great, gevaldik, so I'll sit back and, let the sheep fall where they may. No, that's not question is all of that. You have to do something. You have to do something in this world in order to draw down the nevuah. This idea, Maksava Kabbalah writes, is written out explicitly by the Ramban earlier in Chumash in Perek Yudbeis. Shekol gzeiras irin sheod lo yavso mikochen yuspo el apoal beezer dugma v'simon adayin en kiyuma muchlot sheyiyah. The Ramban writes that even if the greatest nevuah in the world was delivered, but there wasn't something done physically in this world in order to cement the power of that nevuah, there's no guarantee that the nevuah is actually going to come to fruition. The Esher Hulis Batel, the Ramban writes that nevuah could be nullified in theory. And the Ramban there writes that an example of this is with Elisha, where Elisha is given a nevuah that the Jews are going to be successful against Aram, against one of their enemies. So in order to show that that the Jews are going to be successful against Aram, Elisha tells the person who's asking him the question, what's going to be, shoot these arrows, and the fact that these arrows are going to be shot is going to be a siman, is going to be a sign that Aram is going to fall into your hands. We're learning Yechezkel on Shabbos. So we know throughout Sefer Yechezkel, there are many, many examples of this. Yechezkel makes a model of Yerushalayim and he builds it and he burns it. Then later on, Yechezkel tells the Jews in Bavel to make a model of the third Beis HaMikdash as a sign that it's going to be brought to fruition. Again, why do you have to make models? Why do you have to make signs? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you X is going to happen, so X is going to happen. Not necessarily. As the Ramban says, the Nevuah has a greater chance of Kiyum, of coming to fruition, when after the Nevuah, the recipients of the Nevuah do some kind of physical action to cement the Nevuah into this world and to guarantee that it's going to happen. So that's the same thing that happened over here. In other words, we're usually accustomed to reading the story in Chumash as Yaakov Avinu was brilliant. He was able to come up with some kind of way, either through genetics, as some explain it, or just through whatever, skulas, you know, whatever it was. Yaakov Avinu was brilliantly able to come up with some way to outsmart Lavan, and of course he did it with Siyata Deshmaya, but it's really a tribute to Yaakov Avinu's incredible intelligence, whether again in genetics or skulas, whatever it happens to be. The Ksav HaKabbalah is saying, no, you mistook the horse and the cart. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a nevuah to Yaakov Avinu that I'm going to help you, I'm going to make this whole thing work for you. But in order to make sure that it's going to happen, you, Yaakov, have to do something in this world in order to ground the nevuah, to cement it to this world, and to ensure that it's going to happen. One last point, just on this idea, and this is actually a very helpful idea in terms of a famous Gemara in Perek HaRoah, the last Perek in Masechta Brachos. V'chein hu ha'inyan b'chalomos. If you were wondering about how dreams work, right? Baruch Hashem, I know I give shiurim all the time, and many people dream during the shiurim. So if you're wondering how dreams work, so dreams work in a similar way, says the Ksav HaKabbalah. A person has an unbelievable dream, an amazing dream. He dreams that he's going to be, you know, king of Israel. I don't know. He dreams incredible things that are going to happen to him. The dream need not necessarily come to fruition. Even an amazing dream, which is, again, a dream could be a shtickle nevuah. Ad bo haposter ho amiti. When does the dream come to fruition? When a good interpretation is given of the dream. Because as the Ksav HaKabbalah writes, speaking out the meaning of the dream is a maisa. It's an action. The Gemara says, Akimas Fosayim have a maisa. To say something with your lips is on a certain level. It's a kind of action. It's not as physical an action as shooting an arrow. But if you not only have a good dream, but then somebody comes and says, I interpret this dream in a positive fashion, that the interpretation itself gives the dream a certain degree of kiyum, of stability. It makes the dream come to fruition. The dream without an interpretation might have been a nice dream. It might have been a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on some level. But it's not necessarily going to come to fruition as long as it hasn't been spoken out as having a positive element to it. Now, again, just to speak this out a moment, this fits in and helps understand a very puzzling group of Gemaras in HaRoah. We know the ninth and last Perek of Brachos has about 2.5 blocks devoted to dreams. And the Gemara there tells an amazing story of Abaye and Rava, who both went to Bar Hedya, a dream interpreter, and they basically had the same dream. So Abaye paid the dream interpreter, and Rava, not so much. He didn't pay the poster chalomos. So, you know, the guy was not so happy. So, you know, if you pay, Abaye got a good interpretation, and Rava got a bad interpretation. So, okay, if we just stop the story here, we would say, okay, so, you know, we see this whole thing is fake, you know. You know, it's the same dream, you know. If I give a good interpretation for this one, a bad interpretation for this one, you know, that's what causes it. But lo and behold, Abaye's dreams all turned out, you know, to be positive. All the good things that had been promised happened to him. And Rava, who had exactly the same dream, but with a different interpretation, a negative interpretation, had all these terrible things happen to him. And, you know, finally they caught up to Bar Hedya, and they found that in his book of, you know, dream interpretations for dummies, you know, whatever book he had exactly. So Bar Hedya had, you know, in his book, Kol HaChalomos Hochim Acher HaPisaron, you know, the Chalomos are determined based on the interpretation. So, you know, obviously Rava was incredibly upset with the fact that Bar Hedya had messed up his life in so many ways by giving a bad interpretation. So how do you understand that? How do you understand that HaKol Holech Acher HaPisaron, you know, that it's all the interpretation that makes the dream? On a certain level, one might be inclined to interpret that psychologically. In other words, you know, the dream doesn't really mean X or Y, but it's what I think the dream means that's going to be literally a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I think it's going to be good, it's going to be good. Think good, it'll be good. You know, if I think bad, it's going to be bad. But the Ksav HaKabbalah is not saying like that. The Ksav HaKabbalah is saying, no, fundamentally speaking, the one who interprets the dream really shapes what's going to happen with the dream. Why? Because the dream is a shtickel of nevuah, and the nevuah comes to fruition once you do some kind of maisa, some kind of action in this world to ground and connect the nevuah to this physical world. And the interpretation is that maisa. It is that act of, you know, not just being a passive recipient of the chalom, of the nevuah, but actually connecting it to the world in some way. So if you connect it to the world verbally in a good way, that will help it come true in a good way. If you connect it to the world in a bad way, verbally in a bad way, so that's going to make it come true in a bad way as well.
Good question.
Yeah.
That's the last thing we discussed about the dreams, and if you pay well, you'll get an interpretation. So someone goes before a judge. Judge, to get a good determination.
Depends who you ask. Right. Right. So what's clear in that story is that Barhedi is a Rasha. I mean, he gets killed in the end of the story. You know, it doesn't work out well for him. And I think the Gemara is, I think it's pretty clear from the Gemara that Barhedi was unethical in, you know, basing the interpretation on whether he was paid or not. In other words, if you're really a, you know, he would have been barred from his profession,
well,
you know, in a different context.
Text, it was wrong to guess.
What's that?
If it was wrong to text, then I probably never should have even offered
it. No, not necessarily, because again, it's different than judgment. Judgment, you have to decide between two people. So in other words, if I pay you and the other guy doesn't pay you, so what do you think the judge is going to say? But here, the guy's just doing me a service. So, you know, the truth is, why shouldn't I tip him? I mean, it makes sense.
How is that different from going to someone you're not allowed in the view and seeing the future?
Right.
Isn't he telling you the future? We have, quote unquote, an ordinary dream, whatever that means. And here's this person, in violation of Torah, telling you what your future is going to be.
Right. So apparently what you see is that divination is not every act of trying to predict the future falls into the parsha of divination, of nichush. So for instance, we see, I mean, just to give an example which doesn't fully answer the question, but we see Chazal had no problem asking children for psukim, and then, you know, what pasuk did you learn today in cheder? And then on the basis of whatever pasuk they learned today in cheder, they make decisions. And we see the Gemara is like that. And Shulchan Aruch is paskin that even though you're not allowed to make arbitrary decisions based on, you know, a black cat, a ladder, you know, all these kind of things, but if somebody tells you a pasuk and you say, oh, the pasuk is telling me X, that's legitimate, that's okay. Yeah, so again, what the difference is, you know, has to be fleshed out. You know, the Garal HaGro, right? The Gro would famously open up a chumash, and based on whatever pasuk came up, he would make life decisions. So that apparently is okay. Again, what's the line exactly? We'd have to figure that out. But there are certainly types of predicting the future which are okay. In other words, and apparently one of those types of predicting the future is dream interpretation. That's legitimate. It's not that any prediction of the future is automatically a problem. There's certain types which are okay, and there's certain types which are not okay.
Second question.
Sorry. Yeah.
Will there be tough on the Yaakov? In other words, we remember Yo said when you want to get out of jail, he asked for a favor. He asked the star question, was it, to intercede?
Right.
And he was punished for that.
Right, so the way that Sava Kabbalah understands is that this is part of what the Malach told him. In other words, the Malach said, Hashem is going to make this work for you, and in order to make it work, here are some things that you should do. Not because what you're going to do is going to make it happen. In other words, you're not causing it to happen, but the conduits which the nevuah is going to come true are these maisim, right? Are these maisim that you have to do, arbitrary maisim, but these maisim, you know, tie it to the world in some, you know, concrete kind of way.
Yeah.
the basic thing. If Barhejo was in Russia, you see the kind of meets in the Shula. Can't even describe how they killed him. Why was his interpretation allowed to take effect? I mean, he's giving a term as a Russia. So why did the Russian allow that?
Right. So, by the same, I mean, it's a good question. In other words, why does Hashem allow Barhejo's interpretation to mess up the life of Rava? But you might as well ask the same question as follows: Rava's walking home from shul one night. A mugger stops him in an alley. Or not Rova, you know, somebody. A mugger stops him in the alley and says, "Your money or your life?" He says, "I have no money." Boom, and he shoots the guy. Right? So why does Hashem allow that to happen? So whatever the answer is to that question is the answer to your question. Meaning, Kodesh Baruch Hu allows evil to take place. He allows evil to take place in natural fashions, and he allows evil to take place in supernatural fashions. And I was like, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, the way Nevuah works is that Nevuah is brought to fruition through a Maisa. And, you know, speaking out what the interpretation is, the Sechidish of Aksava Kabbalah, is considered to be a Maisa, it's considered to be an action. And yes, unfortunately, even if a Rasha, you know, becomes the one who gives the interpretation of a dream, that Rasha's interpretation, as long as it fits the dream, is going to shape what is actually going to happen. Tragic, but you know, no more or less tragic than the fact that if I hold up a gun to somebody and I pull the trigger, in all likelihood, you know, the person is going to die, whether it seems to me that he deserves that death or not. I guess he didn't realize that was the issue until a much later point in time. He may not have had the money, you know. It's not clear. Okay, so we will Be'ezrat Hashem pick up next week with Parshas Vayishlach.